been avoiding conflict lately? Are you afraid that if you speak your truth to someone, you might damage the relationship permanently? Is inner conflict eating you up inside? Maybe you're thinking one thing, but doing another, and you just can't seem to get your head and heart to line up. As humans, we all deal with conflict. Join Jennifer McKenna now as she talks to business leaders about the importance of conflict and how we can all move through it with greater grace and ease, ultimately taking our relationships and our lives to the next level by facing conflict courageously.
Happy Thursday, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Conflict Rising. I'm super excited about what we're going to discuss today, which is patriotism. And that may seem like an odd topic to talk about when we dig so deeply into cultural conflicts and inner conflicts and so forth. But as we approach the 4th of July holiday, I was trying to get ahead of it, knowing we'd all be on vacation and the studio would be closed, and I wanted to run an encore, and I was thinking, what guest would I want to bring on to talk about the power of true patriotism? And my dear old friend, Commander Doug Reinbold, who served in active duty service for 21 years in the U.S. Navy. He's recently retired, and he is currently in the defense industry in the Washington, D.C. area, and I am tickled to death to bring him onto the show to share all of his great insights and passion with all of you. So welcome to the show, Doug. I hope you don't mind that I call you
Hey.
Doug.
No, please, absolutely. That's probably the nicest thing I get called a lot. So, no, that's great. I'm happy to be here, Jennifer. It's really nice to, reconnect with you and get to chat with you. And hey, I'm always happy to chat about, especially when the 4th of July is coming up and stuff like that. So I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to try to answer anything I could do to give someone some insight into, what it's like to be a military member today and a veteran, and hopefully I can, add a little paint to that portrait for you.
Oh, we would love that. So let's start out, if you don't mind, with a little bit of your background. What made you, or what drove you, to become a Navy pilot?
Well, so that, that's it's probably a simple answer and a complicated answer, but really, I think, and you kind of understand this. I mean, we both grew up in the same small town, and, small town in the Midwest where people kind of grow up with the ideals of, kind of a call to service. I mean, we're used to taking care of each other, your neighbor, the folks down the street. And so, I think with sort of that nurturing and just really having the idea that, I really, like you, Jennifer, I hit the lottery when it came to families and friends and in a small town. And so I really felt like some way I wanted to be able to give back. And I thought about different ways of doing that. And people have all kinds of different ways of doing that. Serving either their community or, they go into being a first responder, maybe want to be a nurse, things like that. So the thing that kind of pulled at me, my dad had taken me on a helicopter ride when I was about 10 years old. And I thought, wow, people actually get paid to do this. This is pretty amazing. And then I'd always thought about the military service. A lot of people from the Midwest do that. It's a way to get out and kind of see the world and go experience things you haven't experienced before. And honestly, it's probably a little embarrassing for me to admit this, but I did happen to turn 16 in the summer of 1986, which, if anybody remembers, the movie that summer was Top Gun. And so I went to see Top Gun a few times, and I thought, wow, that's amazing. You can go do that. And I thought, what a huge challenge, because I didn't know anybody in the Navy. I didn't really know anyone who, flew for the Navy. Yeah. And so I thought, well, let's go give it a shot and see what happens. And sort of a long story short, I ended up going to, like you, Jennifer, I ended up going to Purdue University, and Purdue actually has an aviation program, which was amazing. And a really just a lucky break that I'm a state school has an aviation program. And so I went to school for aviation, and during that time, you know, the Gulf War was going on, and I just thought, you know, hey, there's still got to be a chance out there I can go and sort of serve and get back. So luckily I was able to get accepted to officer candidate school eventually, and I got trained by the Navy to go fly. So it was pretty amazing, and I really – I hate to overuse the word privilege, but it really was such a privilege for me to be able to do all that. And so anyway, it's my way of trying to give back and what I could do to pay back all the teachers and coaches and friends and family and just, you know, everything that was given to me. I'm a big believer in, you know, whether you take the religious meaning out of it or not, but to whom much is given, much is expected. And that's kind of been a theme for me, for my life. And I really feel like that's important. You need to recognize when, you know, you've been given a lot of things and the luxuries you've had and to be able to pass that on and pay it forward and pay it back. And I think that's important. So anyway, that's, like I said, that's my long story, but that's kind of what got me to the Navy and to be able to serve.
Well, I think I've brought this up to you a couple of times over the years, even though we were joking before the show started, that even though we grew up together and we went to college together, we probably haven't seen each other since then. So we both lived lifetimes since those days. But I vividly remember when Top Gun came out, and I vividly remember how you would light up like a Christmas tree just talking about it. And I just knew from that day forward that's his path. That's just what he's going to do. And it has tickled me to death over the years to know that that was your career and that you really enjoyed it and remained as passionate about it as you were all those years ago when you were first inspired.
Right.
So that right there is really so much why I wanted you to be on the show. For those of you in the audience who don't know, I was raised by a Marine. My father, he only served the traditional 4 years, but something happened for him in those 4 years that profoundly impacted his life. And I just happened to be raised in a home where patriotism was hugely important. We were very proud of the U.S. military, very proud of the Marines, very proud of our country. We always had a Marine Corps flag on one side of the garage and an American flag on the other outside the house. so this has always been very near and dear to my heart. My father passed away last Thanksgiving, and so I was thinking, gosh, who could I talk to that might be as passionate as he was? And you came to mind. And so tell us a little bit, you know, before we dive into patriotism, I'd love for you to share a little bit about what your career has been like. Where has it taken you? And what was the most eye-opening or life-changing?
Wow. Yeah, you know, and it's challenging to boil, 21 years down to sort of a story. But really, the Navy gave me more than I ever even expected. It did allow me to travel the world. I got to serve with just the most amazing people you would ever want to be around. And I was so privileged to do that. And I think that's one of the uniqueness qualities that a veteran gets a lot of times is that we're Americans like everyone else, but we've seen different things and we've given up a little bit of our freedom in order to, you know, protect freedom for everyone else. And so we've done that, and we've also traveled to places in the world where it's not a given. And, you know, I was talking to someone one day and we were talking a little bit about Americans and freedom and things like that. And I said, sometimes it reminds me of the air. And they said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, for an American, air is just a given. Like you go to bed at night, you wake up in the morning, you don't think, oh, I wonder if there's going to be air. Well, it's the same way with freedom. You're just like, hey, we're Americans. We went to bed free. We're going to wake up free. And I think sometimes just like air, only in its absence can we really appreciate it. So if you've never been in a situation where you know, you couldn't breathe and you were fighting for air, and you know, or maybe you had a medical problem and you couldn't breathe, or, you know, it just dawns on you, wow, this is, it's not just a given. And it's the same way with, I think, you know, freedom and the society and what we have. And I think once you've traveled the world and you've seen things and walked in other people's shoes, you can't, it's really hard to appreciate that. And I know sometimes people struggle with that and they get frustrated with, you know, Americans that don't get it, but I'm like, you know what? They just haven't seen it. You know, they haven't been in a situation where, you know, they've had that sort of pulled back away from them, and it loses something, I think, sometimes when you just treat it as a given. And so, you know, in 21 years, I've deployed all over the world. I've, you know, gone into some interesting places and done interesting things. And I mean, you know, to boil myself down to just say, oh, I was a Navy pilot would not even scrape the surface of what I've been able to do, just because of my job. I mean, gosh, getting to lead young men and women and learn from them, has been some of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my life. I mean, just that chance of making a difference in someone's life, and gosh, you know, that's something not to be overestimated, because, you know, I mean, that's where things really mean something. I mean, at the end of the day, we're in the military, we don't worry a lot about getting paid and, you know, how much money we're making and what kind of car we're going to drive and a lot of the things that seem to absorb people. I mean, we have the luxury, we go to work every day with a mission, and we carry out that mission, and we, like I said, we carry it out with just some of the best people that are walking around. And you know, I tell people sometimes who get worried about, you know, other generations, the millennials, and I'm like, oh gosh, you got to go see some of the folks that are joining the military. I mean, you know, kids that just a few weeks ago were sitting in their, you know, high school chairs in their class are now at boot camp and raised their hand and said, you know what, I'm going to go do something that's bigger than me. And you see, you know, young folks like that, and it's just so inspiring because they get it. And, you know, we have a little bit of a divide going between military and civilians that has happened over the years. But, you know, we work on that, and we try to, you know, bring people together. But, you know, I think just so many experiences I've had, and you know, I can remember one that I think would be very specific that would make me kind of more memorable day. And it was really close to 4th of July, and this was back in the early 2000s, and we had been deployed over to the Middle East, and we were getting close to a port, and believe it or not, this is probably shocking for people to hear, but, you know, you see the movies of the quintessential, you know, drunken sailor on liberty, but shockingly enough, the men and women who serve in the U.S. Navy and go out for months without a break, sometimes when we pull into port, well, every time we pull into port, we always have what we call Comrail, which are community relations projects, which we go in throughout the community and do different things. And it might be something like, I don't know, just helping to clean up a church, or go visit some folks, or visit with kids, or whatever. So anyway, people actually take their liberty, which, you know, they've been on a boat for months on end without a break, and they actually use their liberty to go out and help people in the community, which is just awesome to do. But so anyway, we pulled into a place in Southeast Asia, a small little country most folks probably have not heard of. It was called East Timor. And it's right next to Indonesia, Malaysia, and you know, the country had a lot of problems over the years. The power changed hands, and we were brought in there. So we brought the ship in there, and the first few days we were bringing in water and things like that. A lot of folks don't realize how much the Navy does, and really all the military, for you know, human aid and disaster assistance. I mean, we do that all the time. So this was no big deal. You know, we took it in and we brought water in, some things in. And so the next day they asked, there was a whole group of us, actually my a helicopter detachment. We went in, and they asked us, they said, hey, look, we're going to turn this old army barracks into an orphanage for some kids, and we need some help painting it and other things. Absolutely. So we rolled in there and, you know, showed up and said, hey, we're here. And we just thought we'd be showing up to some sort of building. And of course it was, and it was really old building and not much to it. And really, you know, just concrete walls and a roof. And that was about it. And so, and some buckets of paint. And it's funny. So we got at it and started painting, and all of a sudden, you could see little faces popping up here and there out of the windows. And we were like, well, what is that? And then we kind of looked out and we'd hear some giggling and running around. And all of a sudden, we went outside and there was probably, I don't know, 30, just the most beautiful little kids you've ever seen in your life. And they were all running around and they didn't know us and they didn't know what to call. So they kept calling us American, American, American. And so, you know, they didn't speak the language, but they were so interested in what we're doing. And it dawned on us, my gosh, these are the kids that we're painting this place for. And all these kids are orphans because, you know, throughout a lot of the conflict, unfortunately, a lot of parents were taken away, not just the men, but the women were taken away too. So all these little kids didn't have anything. And so, you know, here we were painting these old buildings that most Americans wouldn't even want to, you know, camp in. And this was going to be their home, and they were so excited about it. Well, so we started, you know, the kids were around us and wanted to be around us, and we loved it. And so we'd start digging through our pockets to see what we could find. And literally, like, you know, I had maybe, you know, a power bar in my pocket and some gum. And so we started handing this stuff out. And Jennifer, I tell you what, if you've ever seen, you know, a kid who, gets told he's going to go to Disney World that day, the look on their face was the exact same look that these little kids had on their face when we were handing them a stick of gum. And, you know, I would watch this one, little boy, and I could tell he was kind of taller, and he seemed to be a little bit of the leader of the group. And he would, I'd always hand him something, and he would turn around and divvy it up and hand it to the other kids, and always made sure that all the other kids got something. And so I don't know if they were his brothers or sisters or whatever, but he was in charge. So I kept calling him boss for most of the day because he seemed like the leader. And so I'd tell him, I'd say, hey, boss, come over here, you know, and so the funny thing is, so we were all doing this, and we were all trying to take, you know, give them stuff. And, you know, we hadn't planned on this, so we had nothing. Well, on every Navy ship, there's what we call the ship store, which there's not much to it. It's certainly not a Target, but, you know, it's got a few things in there, some snacks and, you know, little things that they can pick up in the ship store to take care of the entire ship's population. Well, so I was able to get on the radio, and I called back one of my guys who worked for me. And I said, hey, you know, I was calling on a walkie-talkie and trying to call in a helicopter. And I said, hey, I need you guys to bring me the ship store. And he's like, and so one of the guys that's talking to me, he said, sir, he's like, you're breaking up. You want me to bring what from the store? And I said, bring the store. And he said, you want the whole store? I'm like, bring the whole store. So no kidding. They loaded up the entire store. The ship found out about it. People pulled out every care package they could find, did everything they could to bring these kids. And really, it was, gosh, it was, I mean, we felt so inadequate. We're like, this is nothing. But the kids were so excited. And so, you know, we gave them the stuff, and we were only going to be there for the day. You know, the little kid was running around that I called boss, and I kept trying to give him something, and he wouldn't take anything, and he would always give it away. And I was like, okay, so we got ready to leave, and we were going to get back on the helicopter and fly away. And, you know, boss came up to me, and he was like, bye, you know. And so I literally had nothing left in my pockets. And I remembered at that time that I had my flight suit rolled down, because, you know, we were painting and stuff like that, and that's all we had to wear. And so I was rolling my flight suit back up, and I reach over, and I feel, like, on the left side of my arm, I feel my American flag patch right there. And it's in Velcro. We wear Velcro so we can take these things off if we go into combat or something. So, you know, it literally, the only thing I had to give, I tear off this American flag, and I put it, I handed it to him, and you would have thought I handed him a gold bar. He didn't want to touch it. He was so enamored of it, and he looks at it, and I could see him thinking, and he looks up at me, and he goes, American, and he points at it, and I said, yes, because, you know, he got it. I'm like, America, yeah. And then he said, and he took the flag, and he stuck it on his shirt because it had some Velcro because it would stick, and he put it on his shirt, and he was so proud, and he said, I remember this forever. He said, I, American. And I said, yes.
Aww.
I said, you, American, too. It was, you know, to this day, it still moves me because.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
You know, it was kind of moving moment for me. So that's the thing that I really remember from all my days in service. So.
Well, I can't think of anything else that embodies the American spirit more than that story. We're going to return after this commercial break. Stay tuned.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. So I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking to Commander Doug Reinbold, who just retired recently from 21 years as a U.S. Navy pilot. And, Doug, that story you told was so moving. And I can see why it is still moving to you all these years later. And, you know, I said it right before we went to the commercial break, but all I kept thinking as you were describing it, I could envision the scene so vividly, and I think that is the American spirit. That is,
right.
I mean, that is who we are. And as divided as we feel right now culturally, because of a very intense political landscape, I would suggest, I think that underneath all of the differing beliefs is that base. That's who we are. That's who we are foundationally. And
right.
I think we're a giving society, and I think we're a beautiful society. And, you know, I think with so much media, with the advent of social media, and, you know, we're inundated all day long with the negativity. So I just deeply appreciate that you shared such a positive angle on military service. I do
right.
think, you know, I was contemplating this the other day. I was thinking kind of back to the days of Vietnam, because today's culture feels somewhat similar to me to the 60s. You know, it was a very transformative time, a lot of social upheaval, a lot of social changes. And so it's not exactly the same today. We've progressed in many ways. We haven't in other ways. But I do think there are enough similarities, and I think back, and one of the things I was contemplating this morning as I was thinking about the show was, you know, thank goodness, no matter how divided we may be politically, and no matter how strong people's opinions may be for or against the administration, current and former, at least as a whole, it feels like the population in general supports the military, regardless of what some of the decisions are. And I think that's the biggest difference I see between today and the 60s is that, you know, in the 60s, it became so controversial. And I, you know, I think we've tried so hard. I don't know that we've tried enough, honestly, but I think we've tried so hard to heal the wounds that we left the Vietnam vets with, because it's unconscionable the way they were treated. It wasn't. Then none of those were their decisions. And and so I am grateful for that. I don't know if that's how you feel, or if y'all, when you were active duty or as a veteran now, if you do feel more love, so to speak, from those of us who are civilians. But I certainly feel deeply, a deep compassion and gratitude toward you and all our servicemen and women.
You know, Jennifer, I could not agree more. I think, thank goodness, one of the things that our society sort of educated itself was that, you can attack ideas without attacking the people. And I think, unfortunately, that's what happened to our, God bless them, I mean, our Vietnam vets, like your dad, just the things that they went through. And it's just, it's almost unbelievable. Like today, it's hard for you even to imagine that that actually happened. It seems like, well, maybe it was just in the movies, but no, I mean, it's unfortunate what happened. It wasn't everybody doing it, but it was enough people that did it that, you know, and, you know, I think today I'm so lucky because, you know, when I was in uniform and, you know, I was walking through the airport or walking down the street, I mean, so many people just stopped me and thanked me for my service. And, you know, I always appreciate it. I always stop and say, hey, thank you for your support. Because what I know I'm doing is, look, they're not thanking Doug Reinbold. They don't know Doug Reinbold. They're thanking the idea of someone signing up and saying, I'll go take the watch for this country. And so I sort of take that thank you as, I'm taking that thank you for the folks like your dad, who didn't get thanked, and, you know, the folks that aren't around anymore, and the young people that are out today serving. So I kind of take that for everybody. So it really, we've done a good job of that, of really recognizing that. And then, you know, I really, you know, over the years can't think of really any instance where, you know, people are always interested in the, my perspective at the time, because I think it's different, because we're actually the instruments of some of the political process, which is okay. And we understand that, but it's something we sign up for. And I really didn't have any negative, interactions with folks. Everybody was always, even all around the world. I mean, as much as people like to say, oh, you know, gosh, nobody in the world likes Americans. And that's so not true. It's so not true. I've been all over the world and I've had the kindest people be kind to me. And at the end of the day, you know, I met all these awesome folks that just wanted the same things I wanted. They wanted to take care of their families. They wanted to raise their kids. They wanted to be able to worship where they wanted to worship. They wanted to, go to a school that they could go to. It's all the same stuff that we all want. And people want to divide everybody up and say, well, you know, they're different and they don't like us. And, well, that's just out of ignorance because you just don't know and you haven't been there. And so that's one perspective that I get is that, you know, sometimes people want to tell me stuff and I say, okay, well, what was your experience when you were over there? And they would say to me, over where? And I'm like, oh, wait, so you haven't been around the world and talked to these people. This is just what you've read on the internet, right? And I think it takes them back a little bit. They're like, well, I guess that's probably true. And I said, so, you know, that's not my experience. Maybe it was yours. But, you know, we do have to watch because there is somewhat of a divide. And I don't know why it's happened over the years between military and civilian, whereas you know, I mean, back during World War II, I mean, 12% of the population was in uniform, whereas now it's less than 0.5%. And I think it's great that, people forget that our entire military is all volunteer. Every person is there because they want to be there, not because, you know, like in your dad's era when people were conscripted and there was the draft going on and people were, had to go serve whether they wanted to or not. And that's hugely challenging. And some people that didn't ask for any of that got, you know, a lot of grief over it. And in a lot of places of the world, you do have to serve. I mean, that's one of the great things in America is that, you know, we love it. And if you ask someone in the military, they probably say, I love it because, everybody that's here wants to be here. We all have different reasons, things that drove us to be there, but we all wanted to be there. No one's forced to be there. And so, but, you know, Americans, I think, in spurts, they will remember things like 9/11 happens and all of a sudden, you know, the flags come out and everyone gets excited and everyone thinks about it. And then a few weeks later, you know, you're kind of back to your routine and whatever people are doing, they go back at it because they think, well, you know, that, you know, we're not at war. We're not. And, you know, back in World War II and different times, people really felt that sacrifice. And I don't think maybe today people feel as much sacrifice as they did before. You know, I remember plenty of stories. My mom and dad were little kids during World War II and just the things of like, you know, you only took a trip once a year to go drive up to the big city because you couldn't use the tires. They needed the rubber. You know, you had to go, you know, pick milkweed on the side of the road for the sailors' kapoks. You made a victory garden. You did all these things that I think nowadays we just sort of take kind of our freedom and our security for granted. And I think that's a dangerous idea is to just take that for granted and just assume that we're all going to be always okay.
Yeah, I think so too. I do think that what is happening with a lot of the news being in our face all the time in the internet and not, you know, having a hard time kind of filtering your way through truth and myth, that it's made it difficult culturally because a person can feel very empowered and educated by reading something that isn't true.
Right.
And then if something is true, then there's another whole faction that doesn't even believe it's true. And so it's a very difficult time in history, I think, you know, and ironically, because here we are inundated with more information than we've ever had since the beginning of time, and now we don't know what to do with it because there's so much information we don't
know
what's real and what isn't. And there's nothing like experience to give us our own reality. And I think that's, you know, to your point that people can have very strong beliefs about something and not even recognize that they don't really know what they're talking about, even though they feel strongly about it.
Right.
I think that challenges us a lot today.
Right.
But I also think that that's one of the beauties of being an American is that if you are challenged by something, you know, I mean, I even use this platform sometimes to speak out about issues that I don't agree with the administration about. But that is one of those freedoms. And I'm able to exercise that. And I think what's really critical for all of us to constantly check in with ourselves about is no matter how strongly we feel about something, no matter what platform we may use to speak out about it, no matter how much we want to advocate for something and use our rights in that way, we really always have to check and make sure that our intentions with that information is pure. And that we don't abuse those privileges and that we don't abuse our rights, because that to me is what being an American is. It's taking like stories of what you shared, having that true American spirit of generosity and giving and compassion and building whole communities and just being a community, right? I think there's that mixed with rights. We have the freedom of speech. We have the right to speak out and voice our concerns. And I just think that we always have to remember to pull those two together, that the two need to come
right.
together as one, that we're speaking
right.
out for the reason of ultimately bringing us together, not just to continue to divide us with our anger. And I think that's really hard in today's world. I think it's easy to get carried away with negative emotion. So
I don't know where that
plays out or how you feel, especially coming out as a recent, you know, recently retired military
right.
serviceman.
Well, a good point is that I can tell you it was a little bit of a culture shock to me. And they warn you for this. When you leave the service and you go into the corporate world, it's not going to be the same. And as much as you try to think, I don't know, people are people, it really was tough because, the great thing, another privilege I had was just I went to work every day. It did not matter where the person came from, what their race, religion, sexual orientation. We didn't care about any of that. It's just we all put on a uniform and we went to work and we had a mission and we were going to take care of each other. And that's all that mattered. And just that one piece that brought us together is what we concentrated on instead of worrying about the stuff that we had differences in. It didn't matter. I mean, of course we're all different and that's what made it great was all these different people coming together for this mission. I mean, I used to tell people all the time, man, give me the 6,000 people on an aircraft carrier and I'll solve any problem in the world. And I don't mean that like military, like going in and fighting. I just mean the collection of the awesome young people we have in the military. I could go solve any problem because we would all work together and we would get it done and we wouldn't spend all day having a disagreement and deciding who was more right about something that really didn't even matter. And it's just we look at things that pull us together instead of things that pull us apart. And what a privilege that was. I mean, I equated it one day. I was telling someone, look, when you're a pilot, you think about stuff about you go into harm's way and who's going to come get you if you don't get out of there. I knew that I went to work every day with people who didn't know me, even if they didn't agree with me or whatever. If someone walked in and said, hey, Rhino and his crew, and so, forgive me, that was my call sign, but, Rhino and his crew are down, they're in deep country behind enemy lines. We got to go get them. I need some folks to go. I tell you to a person, there would be a line out the door not because of me, but because of we took care of each other and we didn't care about what things people worried about making us different. It's what a privilege to be able to go to work like that and to serve around those kind of people. And I think, when Americans want to think about things to be proud of, that's what to be proud of. Those are your sons and daughters doing that. Look, the military is not our airplanes and our helicopters and our tanks and our ships. It's all our people. And these kids, are just amazing. And I'll tell you one quick anecdote. When I was on the carrier, so when you're on an aircraft carrier, they have what's called distinguished visitors come out all the time. And they're either celebrities or ambassadors or all over the world. They come and they want to see an aircraft carrier because, look, we're the only nation in the world that really has these, and we got 11 of them that are pretty awesome. So anyway, so one day the admiral who's in charge of the entire strike group, he's relaying this message to us. He had a Middle Eastern prince come and visit the ship, and so they always take him up on what we call Vulture's Row, where you sit up there and you watch the aircraft carrier takeoff and landing cycle. So the everyone's seen the movies, jets are shot off the front, they catch them on the back, cool stuff, right? So anyway, he's relaying this, the admiral is telling us this prince came and visited him, a young prince, and he said he sat up there and usually people enjoy it and make comments. He said he didn't say a word and he just was watching and he thought, oh gosh, I don't know, maybe he doesn't enjoy this or maybe he's not sure what it is. And And so he said that the prince pulled him aside and said to the admiral, and he said, you know, every, and a little bit of broken English, but he said, hey, everyone should see this. And the admiral said, oh, yeah, it's exciting, right? It's fun to watch. He said, no, that's not what I mean. He said, everyone should see this because there would be no wars. And the admiral was really kind of taken aback, and he told that story to us. And really, if you've been there, what you saw was, you know, it wasn't the fact that we could go in and take this immense firepower. It was the fact that these are 18-year-old kids out there on the deck of this aircraft carrier, putting their lives on the line, moving around 70, you know, multi-million-dollar aircraft and making it all work within moments of each other. And just this beautiful ballet of people just going about their jobs in the worst environments. And that's really what this, you know, this prince was saying. He's like, this is amazing. He's like, if America can do this, he's like, why would we ever, you know, go to war? Why would we even think about war? Let's just go solve problems and you know, use this, you know, use these people that we have to do amazing things. And that's the cool thing is that, you know, you get to kind of show that, you know, we call it power projection, which is really saying, hey, look, this is America. These are our sons and daughters. This is what the taxpayers provided. This is what we have because we're willing to, you know, protect our way of life. And, you know, that's powerful and it's important. And I think it's important that people understand that's why we do the things why we do. That's why we go all throughout the world. And you know, we're not trying to police the world. We're taking our American values and the system that we've learned that's been successful for us, and we're letting other folks see it. And I think it makes an impact, and I think it's important.
Absolutely. Another great story. We're going to take another commercial break, and we'll continue our conversation.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone. We are going to continue our conversation with Commander Doug Reinbold, who recently retired from active duty service after 21 years as a U.S. Navy pilot. We're talking about patriotism, and Doug's been sharing some really powerful stories about his experiences in the military and how we're relating that back to what it is to be American. And that really is patriotism, in my opinion, right? It's just my opinion. But patriotism to me isn't about war, and it's not about, you know, power and who we can conquer and how much land we can have and to be proud of all that. Patriotism to me as an American is really taking pride in how generous and beautiful and free, right? We are, as a country, as a group of citizens in the same landmass and beyond, right? We have other areas of America that aren't on one landmass. But the point being is that it's not about the borders and who is what. It's about the American spirit, who we are as a people, what we really stand for. And that's what I'm hoping that everyone takes away from today's show to go into the 4th of July holiday in a couple of weeks, to spend meaningful time with loved ones and to really honor, yes, honor our military servicemen and women who have devoted many years of their lives to protecting the freedoms that we have, but also living by example. You know, Doug, you talked about culture shock, and that really resonated with me when you talked about the difference between what you all did when you were so aligned and everyone had each other's back and you just had the same mission and you knew what to do and there was such high trust. And that is all the difference in the world. And that's what I'm asking everyone to preserve in your own lives, is embody that. Do what we all need to do as individuals to be more trusting, to be more trustworthy, to allow trust and love and faith and compassion really push us through our fears, because it's the fear that divides us. It's the fear that angers us. It's not really each other. And that's hard to remember when we're in the throes of conflict, as we are culturally today. It's also interesting to me too, because as soon as we wrap up the show, I'm on a client site today, actually, and so I'm going to be jumping into facilitating a group session. I'm in a large corporation. I work at executive levels, and it's interesting because my job is to help companies that have been operating from old paradigms move into new paradigm thinking. And the old paradigm, as we all know, was very bottom line focused. And so, unlike the military, which is, I think, part of probably your culture shock becoming a civilian and joining the corporate sector, right, is that bottom line focus really takes whole corporate cultures off point and causes inner conflict and causes inner competition, internal competition, and all these things that make trust go down and productivity go down and morale, right, and turnover go up, and all these things that are costly in the end. So it's pretty ironic that you focus on the bottom line ends up costing you more. But so my exercise today that I'm taking a group through is a visioning process, because I try to move them into thinking about what is your mission, and I don't even mean your mission statement, right? That's big and broad, and so forth. But as a group, as an organization, or as a smaller group, or a team, you know, what is your vision? Because if you don't have that, you're all going to fall apart in your decision making, and then that starts the blame game and the shame game, and all these things start to unravel. And is your customer really being served? And are you really enjoying working together? And I just think you make such a great point, because this is what's dividing us culturally. This is what divides us in the corporate sector. This is behind so many things. And so I thank you so much for sharing your stories. They're so poignant, and they illustrate all the things that I teach all the time. They illustrate it so beautifully. I do, before we wrap up the show, though, I've got a big burning question that's been on my mind that I've just been dying to ask you, and that is that over the past couple of years, we've had a lot of controversy around the national anthem, where we've had some professional athletes who take a knee instead, and they're trying to make a point that we're not dishonoring the flag, we're just trying to I don't want to put words in their mouths, but this is how I've perceived it, is that they just feel like whole communities, in the Black Lives Matter movement, as one example, are not treated fairly, and that is not the American spirit, and they're trying to make a statement. So they're using that moment to make that statement. How, as a retired serviceman, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, you know, Jennifer, and it's funny, I get asked that a lot, and I did when I was in uniform, and I did, and you know, I'm always careful that I'm not speaking for, you know, either when I was in uniform, the United States Navy, or even other veterans. I think every veteran has their own feeling, just like every citizen has their own feeling about that. Now, you know, I will tell you that, look, you're talking to a person who has literally been, you know, in the middle of a downpour rainstorm in my dress uniform, you know, standing at attention while the national anthem is being played, because that's what we do. And so, you know, that's one end of the spectrum. And I grew up with a respect for, you know, the flag and everything American and, you know, elders and all that. Some people didn't grow up that way. You know, unfortunately, there's all kinds of ways to be what I don't think is totally respectful. I mean, you go to a sporting event and people are on their cell phones or running out because they think the beer line's shorter or whatever. But, you know, so for every person, it's different. But I will say this, is that one of the things that made me go and do what I did was I believe in this country, we have the freedom to say when we disagree with things, and we can open up a conversation. And I understand folks are trying to open up a conversation. I can understand what they're trying to do. I don't have to agree with it, but I love the fact that they're able to do that and not be persecuted and not be, you know, just thrown in jail when some countries you would be. You know, that's not going to happen, you know, in my country, as long as I have a say in it. And I was able to kind of stand up and stand on the wall for a while and say that's not going to happen. But, you know, I think it's just people have their own feelings about it. Look, I'm going to have my respect for the flag and the national anthem, and that's what I do. And what you do, it's not going to take away from what I want to do. You know, I don't have to agree with it. I think there's maybe other ways to make a point. But hey, if that's what you choose, then you know, you live in a free country where you are allowed to do that. And, you know, I'm happy about that part. I don't, you know, because we're all not going to agree on everything, of course, and even on how we go about it. But it's a challenge, and it's a complicated issue like anything else. And, you know, I think what we're doing right now is exactly what you do. You just keep talking about it and you find out, other people's positions, you try to put yourselves in their shoes, even though you can't. I mean, you're never going to be another person, but you can try to understand where they're coming from. And you know, I think that's what we do. We find things to bring us together instead of dividing us apart. And I think if you work harder to do that, I think you can be successful in anything, whether it's your family, it's business, or it's just, you know, being an American. I think if you look for those things, I think you'll find them. I think if you look for things, you know, like you talked about earlier, if you want to go find someone on the internet who agrees with you how awful something is, you can go find that. And you can go revel in that if that's what you want to do. But, you know, make up your own mind, you know, be your own person and work to bring things together instead of trying to divide people. And you know, I mean, that's what we did in the military. And I think it was a, you know, a good analogy of just, you know, we all wore the same uniform, we all had the same mission, and we all took care of each other. And I think that's just what you do walking around, you know?
Yes. And that to me is the power of true patriotism, right? It's having each other's back. It's standing for something bigger than you and working really hard to unite.
Right.
And I think that mentality is harder and harder to come by these days.
It
saddens me, but that's why I wanted to do the show today. And we are getting ready to wrap up. We only have a couple more minutes, but I'd just love for you to describe for our listeners, just from your own perspective, what do you truly believe true patriotism is?
Yeah, so that's, you know, it's great to think about that, because I think some days people get confused between patriotism and nationalism. And they're different. And being a patriot is being proud in a way that is not, you know, you're not arrogant about it. And it's funny. Someone not too long ago gave me this analogy, and it really made sense to me once I had kids. And they said, look, you know, loving your country is like, it's a lot like loving your kids. You know, they're our responsibility to raise and direct and, of course, to love. And they're going to have days when, you know, you're bursting with pride, and but not an arrogant pride that says, hey, my kid's better than your kid and every other kid in the world just because we love them. But right. You know, there are going to be days, and you know this as a mom, that they absolutely embarrass you, frustrate you, challenge you, and absolutely just break your heart. But you know what we don't do is we don't give up on them, despite their shortcomings and their challenges. You don't just walk away and say, well, that was too hard. And so in the end, you know, I think what you would do for your children, you do for your country. And we're never going to reach that obtainable level of perfection. It's just not going to happen in our kids or our country. But we're going to keep doing the best we can to try to keep trying. So I really think if you look at it that way, it makes sense. And we're just going to keep trying as Americans. That's what we do.
Beautifully, beautifully said. Well, we're wrapping up today's show. I cannot thank you enough, Doug. I've just thoroughly enjoyed listening to your stories and everything you've had to share. Thank you so, so much. And everyone, please keep all of what he has said in mind as you go into the 4th of July holiday, and then make a commitment to carry that spirit forward from that day on. Take care, everyone. I'll see you next week.